This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it impacts you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We've got a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now, a shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and yes, the Kai PA glasses are back, but only while supplies last, and I'm taking some of them. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
So when is good news about the economy just good news? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Baltimore, I'm Amy Scott, in for Kai Rizdahl. It's Thursday, the 14th of December. Good to have you with us. We're going to start, as we often do, with a number. This one is 202,000. It's the number of people who filed initial claims for unemployment last week, and that's the lowest tally since October. Normally, we don't make too much of a single week's data. It tends to jump around and can be especially noisy this time of year. But lower jobless claims was the second piece of economic news today that surprised to the upside. Retail sales in November also came in better than expected. It sounds positive, but can we call these trends good news? Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino explains why that's even a question.
In an economy where inflation is the big concern, things that sound like good news, like high job openings, low unemployment, and rising wages, turn into bad news, says Gregory Dacko, chief economist at EY.
Excessively strong labor market data is a sign that there may be further inflationary pressures in the pipeline.
Which means the Federal Reserve could keep interest rates high to slow the economy and, as it says, soften the labor market, says Claudia Somm, a former Fed economist.
Well, that's a euphemism for people not getting as big a paychecks and some people probably not getting paychecks at all.
But she says the Fed's tone is shifting. Now, good news for the labor market could be pointing to a soft landing, that elusive scenario where inflation comes down without a recession.
It's starting to really look like we're in a balanced place.
There are now about 1.3 open jobs for every unemployed worker, down from a high of 2 last year. Labor shortages have eased and productivity has jumped, says Gene Goldman at Cetera Financial Group.
Productivity is surging is huge because this puts downward pressure on average hourly earnings, and it just shows that we're producing more. The economy is humming along.
Inflation has come down, but it's still above the 2% rate the Fed is aiming for, so economist Gregory Dacko isn't ready to see the economy through rose-tinted non-inflationary glasses just yet.
Well, you don't know until you're past the soft landing and you're at the gate, but we're not there yet.
So all this news might not be bad or good. It's still just kind of news. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
As we said, November was a pretty good month for retailers overall. Spending was up 0.3% from October and more than 4% higher than a year ago. One especially strong category was non-store retailers, that is mostly online sales, which grew by more than 10% year over year. Marketplace's Elizabeth Troval has more.
It only took customers 3 online orders to get comfortable with online shopping, says Santa Clara University's Kirti Kalyanam. Since COVID, they've really settled in.
Channel habits are so deeply ingrained. Once they pick up a channel habit, it's something they hold on to.
And this year, the physical shopping world and the online one became even more integrated, says University of Houston professor Olivia Johnson.
retail stores are starting to be what we call showrooms, right? Like you can come in and see the product, but they're not really trying to hold a lot. And so you're going to see a lot of that traffic come and move more to their e-commerce sites because the variety is just there.
So when a customer is in store, it really needs to count, says Brian Eshelman at Alex Partners.
Consumers, when they go into the physical world, are not shopping just to pick up items in a store, but to experience the brand.
He also says selling online is less profitable than selling in store. So we could see retailers making changes, like ending free shipping and cutting staff.
You don't need necessarily people buying product for the website and buying product for the stores as separate teams.
One thing they may not cut back on, the use of influencers, who customers trust for honest reviews, especially compared to AI, says Morning Consult's Claire Tassin.
A lot of that sort of more human-driven curation has a lot of power and certainly earns far more consumer trust than an AI recommendation might.
She says while AI has been the big story of 2023, it isn't coming for influencers' jobs just yet. I'm Elizabeth Trovall for Marketplace.
Wall Street today was focused on the bright side. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. A while back, I stopped for a drink at a brewery in Gilbert, Arizona, outside Phoenix.
It's time for trivia!
It was trivia night at Desert Monks Brewing, and the place was hopping.
Whoever wins first game wins a $10 gift certificate!
But I was there to check out one particular beer.
This is our Town Square Lager.
That's Summer Decker, one of the brewery's owners.
Prost. Town Square Lager. It's really refreshing, as lagers are intended to be.
This was a special batch because of the type of water Desert Monks used to brew it. Summer describes it as the purest kind of water, like a blank canvas. But it didn't start out that way.
The water that we get from the city of Scottsdale, this direct potable reuse water, is so clean and fresh.
Wow. And this is wastewater, right? This is coming from the sewer?
Originally, yes.
That's right. Town Square Lager was brewed with recycled wastewater from the nearby city of Scottsdale.
It goes through a multi-stage, multi-million dollar processing system where it filters out anything and everything.
I wanted to see that multi-million dollar system for myself. I've spent the last several months traveling around the Southwest, looking at how people are adapting to water scarcity amidst the ongoing mega drought. So the next day, I headed to Scottsdale's Advanced Water Treatment Plant.
There is, of course, a water feature. A little fountain and pool with a bridge. All recycled water, of course.
Inside, I meet Brian Biesmeyer, executive director of Scottsdale Water, the city's water utility. About 60% of its water comes from the Colorado River. But the river is declining. Researchers say the Colorado River Basin has lost trillions of gallons to human-caused climate change over the past two decades. And with recent cuts to the city's share of the river, and more likely coming, Brian says Scottsdale needs alternatives.
I think it's just that next step that we need to take in the Southwest to provide a sustainable water solution for us.
The next step he's talking about is turning wastewater into safe drinking water. You might know it as toilet to tap. Brian prefers another term, ultra pure water.
We live in a desert environment. We don't get much rain. Our water resources are limited. And this is a way to maximize the water resources we do have. And making this ultra-pure water available for drinking water purposes seems just that next step that we need to do as water managers for the region.
So can we see how it works?
Yes, please.
Brian takes me to a viewing area where we see clusters of long tubes.
This is our first membrane treatment.
Before it even gets here, the wastewater has gone through treatment to remove solids and other gunk.
We actually use microbes, naturally existing microbes, to degrade waste and to eat that waste up.
Then the clear water goes through several more rounds of treatments and filtration to remove bacteria, viruses, chemicals, and other impurities. It's disinfected with ultraviolet light and tested for a long list of potential contaminants. Then a few minerals are added in for taste.
Because there's nothing in the water, and most people enjoy water that actually has some minerals in it. Many bottled water manufacturers do the same thing.
Scottsdale isn't sending any of this water directly to taps yet, but for decades, it's been pumping treated wastewater into the ground, where it trickles through hundreds of feet of soil, a natural filter, into the aquifer, and eventually gets pumped back out. That's known as indirect potable reuse, and lots of communities do it. But with the ongoing drought, Scottsdale's moving toward direct potable reuse, skipping the aquifer and sending the water right into its drinking water supply. And that means some PR to convince customers that it's safe.
We understand why folks could have some qualms about it, but I think when they look into the science, they look at the quality of the water we actually produce, they see the test of the water that we produce, a reasonable person will be won over.
That's where that brewery I visited comes in. Scottsdale Water has teamed up with local brewers to get people used to the idea. Desert Monks has been so happy with the result, they plan to start brewing most of their lagers with recycled Scottsdale water. Okay, so we already know I was a fan of the beer. How does the water itself taste?
Wow. Okay, it's a drinking fountain.
Yeah, we wanted this to look like something people are familiar with.
It tastes like bottled water, just like you said it would.
I can tell you that generally people like the taste of our recycled water. Why? Because it's the same process bottled water use.
I have to tell you, my 12-year-old daughter, when I told her I was coming here and that I was going to taste some recycled wastewater, she said, well, isn't all water recycled wastewater?
Smart girl. All we do here is we take that natural environment and we accelerate it with a technology.
Water experts say this is the future, and attitudes are changing slowly. From Los Angeles to Wichita Falls, Texas, cities across the Southwest are working on plans for direct potable reuse. In Scottsdale, the goal is to start sending its clean, recycled water directly to customers by 2026. That's a lot of time to get used to the idea. And you can hear more about technology that's producing drinking water from some unexpected sources, even the air around us. Check out our Climate Solutions podcast, How We Survive. Coming up.
It was all pent up. It got pent. It got spent.
That's demand for you. But first, let's do the numbers. Still riding that post-Fed meeting high, I guess. The Dow Jones Industrial Average added 158 points, 0.4%, to finish at 37,248. The NASDAQ ticked up 27 points, 0.2%, to close at 14,761. And the S&P 500 added 12 points, 0.25%, to end at 4719. So how much are you spending on media these days? Streaming, internet, cell phone plans, maybe cable? the average American consumer spending just under $3,400 a year to stay connected. That's according to research from reviews.org. A pretty big chunk of that, just under $800 a year, is spent on mobile plans. So let's take a look at how some of those mobile phone service providers are doing. Verizon increased 2.4%. T-Mobile US lost 1.7%. AT&T gained 1.2%. Bonds rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 3.91%. You're listening to Marketplace.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Ascensus, helping people dream bigger, aim higher, and save more with financial confidence. Unleash the power of your retirement savings plan with innovative technology that makes things easy, top-notch service from experts who care, and flexible solutions that can grow with you. For more than 40 years, Ascensus has been helping savers achieve their goals. We can help you achieve yours, too. Learn more at Ascensus.com. That's Ascensus.com.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns. Meaning, when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it impacts you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We've got a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now. A shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and yes, the Kai PA glasses are back, but only while supplies last, and I'm taking some of them. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
This is Marketplace. I'm Amy Scott. We learned this week that interest rates in the U.S. might have hit their peak. With inflation cooling, the Fed suggested it could start cutting its target rate in the coming year. Elsewhere in the world, high interest rates are taking a toll. The World Bank finds that low and middle income countries spent nearly $450 billion paying off principal and interest last year. That's the highest number on record. Marketplace's Savannah Marr has more.
A few years ago, developing countries were already dealing with unsustainable debt levels, says Christine McDaniel with the Mercatus Center at George Mason University.
And then new geopolitical crises popped up.
Public health lockdowns, later the war in Ukraine.
And then interest rates went up.
Developing nations have also been paying a higher price for climate change.
And it just snowballed.
In the last 3 years, we saw countries default on their debt 18 times, according to the World Bank. That includes Zambia, Lebanon, and Sri Lanka. Anna Gelpern with the Peterson Institute for International Economics says high levels of sovereign debt aren't always a bad thing.
Look, debt is a means to an end.
When that end is better healthcare, education, and infrastructure, then Gelpern says debt is helping develop economies. But lately, many of the world's poorest countries have been borrowing just to stay solvent.
When debt becomes a means to debt repayment rather than a means to economic growth and human flourishing, that's when you see the problem.
Lots of existing debt also makes it hard to attract new financing. At a time when Nancy Lee with the Center for Global Development says there are dire consequences for underinvestment in developing nations.
And they really aren't able to pay the additional costs needed for climate resilience and climate adaptation.
The World Bank is calling on financial institutions and creditor nations like China to restructure and relieve debts to struggling countries to help avoid what it calls a lost decade of growth in the developing world. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
We heard earlier about how parts of the Southwest are coping with water scarcity. The flip side of the climate crisis is that often it's the other way around. The National Weather Service estimates flooding caused nearly $2.8 billion in property damage last year. In more than 20 states, people selling homes don't have to inform potential buyers if the house is in a flood zone or has had flood damage in the past. But as climate change makes flooding more common, a growing number of states are passing or strengthening flood disclosure laws. New York is one of the latest. Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports.
2 weeks after Pam Sidman moved into her new condo in Brooklyn in September, New York City got historic torrential rain. That morning, her wife Kelly looked out their bedroom window into the yard and noticed water backing up by their son's bedroom door. She ran downstairs.
And it was pouring in from this door. Pouring in. It was like a waterfall gushing in here.
It is not stopping. Please send help.
Sidman started taking videos to document everything. Soon, she says, water was also seeping in from the door that leads to the building's hallway.
We didn't know what to do. Like, there was no stopping it. It was just pouring. And then it started coming up from the toilet.
Within maybe an hour or so, the water had receded. But afterwards, she says they had to throw out a bunch of furniture, replace all the wooden doors and baseboards, and rip out 4 feet of wall downstairs. When they did that, they noticed something.
We could see the metal support beams that had rust on them.
That made them wonder if maybe the apartment had flooded before. Then a woman who was doing repairs for the building came in to take a look, and turns out it had.
She said, oh yeah, I remember this. I was here last year cutting your walls. I'm like, oh, okay.
The previous owners hadn't said anything about past issues with flooding. Neither had the condo board. And the thing is, they didn't have to. Tyler Taba at the nonprofit Waterfront Alliance says sellers in New York have had the option to give buyers a $500 credit and not disclose all sorts of information about the property, including flood history.
And so what was happening is, about 80% of real estate transactions were happening without disclosure. And so you were a lot of people who were kind of in the dark about what their flood risk might be and what the flood history of a property might be.
Starting in March, sellers will have to tell potential buyers if the property has flooded before. They'll also be required to disclose if it's in a FEMA flood zone and whether flood insurance is required. Landlords will also have to give that information to renters. Joel Scada at the Natural Resources Defense Council says that is rare.
Most states, I'd say 90% of the states, have no disclosure laws for renters. And that's a huge problem because renters are often have less assets to rely on if they suffer a flood. So they don't have the ability to recover as quickly as a homebuyer might.
And he says recovering from a flood is expensive for renters and for homeowners. Jeremy Porter at the nonprofit First Street Foundation says flood disclosure laws are an important way of making sure people are aware of the risks before they make one of the biggest financial decisions of their lives.
There's statistically significant differences between people that are exposed to this information and those that aren't, and the properties that they choose after being exposed to this information.
One study from Redfin found that when people are shown information about flood risk when they're looking at homes, they're more likely to choose one with lower risk. Another from FEMA shows people are more likely to buy flood insurance if they live in a state with strong flood disclosure laws. But Porter says even strong disclosure laws don't necessarily give people the full picture. Many use FEMA flood maps to give buyers a sense of future risk, and they don't take sea level rise into account, and they don't do a great job modeling flood risk from heavy rain either.
And because of that, they're actually missing quite a bit of risk across the country.
But he says disclosure laws do still give buyers and renters a lot of valuable information. Information Pam Sidman wishes she and her wife had had before they spent roughly $2 million on their condo in Brooklyn.
Honestly, I feel like we got a lemon and regrets,
that we didn't do due diligence, maybe, or we didn't know the learning curve or just the right question. I don't know. I just feel a little like kicking ourselves.
And she figures she and her wife could end up losing money on the condo if they sell, since they will be required to tell buyers that it's flooded before.
That'll be, I can't even go there yet, but yeah, it'll suck.
But law or no law, she says she can't imagine hiding it either. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
Back to that retail sales bump in November, we're going to zoom in on one category for a moment, officially known by the Census Bureau as sporting goods, hobbies, musical instruments, and bookstores. Sales were up last month, which makes it a good time to check back in with Adam Levin. He's the general manager of Chuck Levin's Washington Music Center in Wheaton, Maryland. When we talked to him last a couple years ago, the business was getting a boost from all those folks who were stuck at home during the pandemic, picking up instruments and new sheet music. Adam sent us this update.
We were coming out of COVID for the first time, and we were riding the wave of a bunch of new musicians and a bunch of people finding music and finding their way to music when you couldn't travel and couldn't do a lot of things, which was a very exciting time. 2022 was a wild year, a great year. People getting outside, touring happening again, you know, vibes were strong, and inflation wasn't really a part of the conversation just yet. Sales were strong. We had a great 2022. It was awesome. A lot of the brands that were having problems were still having problems, were finding their way through it a little bit, but still demand was high. The buzzword back then would have been pent-up demand, right? That was what everyone said. Oh, there's so much pent-up demand. Well, it was all pent-up. It got pent. It got spent. And then October-ish 2022 is when you first started to hear the buzzwords of inflation and really that kind of that theme in the news. And you could start to see at that moment, sales slowed a little bit and also manufacturing caught back up. The longer term plan is that this has to be a meaningful place of business. There's an ecosystem of thousands of retailers that are selling these products and have built brands around providing the services that that brand does not yet. We fix the guitars, we set them up. You know, there's all these other things that, you know, now as we kind of go into this new world, that's where we have to shine. It's been a wild ride so far, and it's not over yet. It's going to get harder before it gets easier again. We had it easy. It's going to be harder, but there's a way through it.
That's Adam Levin in Wheaton, Maryland, outside D.C. All right, this final note on the way out today, which I would put in the good news category, at least for people who might want to buy a house, I don't know, someday. Freddie Mac says the average interest rate for a 30-year mortgage dipped below 7% this week to the lowest rate since early August. And while 6.95% might not sound great, keep in mind the average was close to 8% in October, which can make a difference of hundreds of dollars in monthly payments. The combination of high borrowing costs and few homes for sale has pushed sales of existing homes down 20% so far this year. But with lower interest rates on the horizon, Freddie Mac is predicting a gradual thawing of the housing market in the new year. John Buckley, John Gordon, Rick Carr, Diantha Parker, Amanda Peacher, and Stephanie Seek are the Marketplace editing staff. Amir Babawi is the managing editor. I'm Amy Scott. We will see you tomorrow. This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.